This week on the podcast, we're starting out a little differently. We'll cover Brexit, the House sit-in, the latest polls, Veepstakes, Rubio.
But first, join us on the other side of this music for highlights from the most important news story in this very packed week. Our 2 days at Politicon. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right. Man,
you could
Politicon
also
was fun.
Find us at Politicon this weekend. You guys, how could we figure out a way to make Politicon 365
weekly.
Days of the year?
I know. It's
I would
so
go to Politicon
good.
Every day.
Me too.
We went last year. Last year was the very first year.
Yeah,
so
and it was fun.
It was really fun.
I think maybe this year was more fun, although there were some other separate issues. But
right. This year we knew what to do.
Yes.
And I think that helped.
Yes. The Politicon didn't seem to necessarily always know what to do.
Right. We knew what to do in the sense that we understood what Politicon was, because last year we didn't necessarily know.
Yeah.
They didn't understand what to do when you're having a convention that people actually want to come to, and that's where things got a little...
Right. In terms of A, parking, and B, line forming.
Yeah.
So,
but got
it was a blast nonetheless.
Some really exciting speakers. We got to see America's slam poet laureate, Sarah Palin. We got to see America's first angry blonde, Ann Coulter.
That's right. Future husband of mine,
Van Jones,
even though he's married, which is upsetting.
Very unfortunate realization.
The usual political Paul Begala, James Carvilles of the universe, like
exactly.
Those people, Vicente Fox today,
and if
Melissa Harris-Perry, who could have potentially been better. Not potentially. She actually 100%
could have been. Instead of rehashing for 500 hours, what we saw and did, because it was 2 days worth of jam-packed excitement, we are going to play you a few clips of audio from our time at Politicon and our reactions to things as they were happening.
Yeah.
And then if you want to know what else happened, check us on social media.
We were social media heroes
We've
this week.
Never social media'd more than we did this week.
No.
We were
on
all over
all
Twitter.
Them,
we were on Instagram. We were on Facebook. You can track our journey on any of those platforms.
Yeah, we were so all over Instagram that one of the audio clips that you're going to hear is me trying to figure out how to work Instagram.
Correct.
So.
But so here's that mashup, and we'll be back with the news on the other side.
Well, we're in line at Politicon. Yeah.
We may never get in.
No.
We might die of dehydration before we do anyway.
That's right. Yeah. Send help or water.
Send or sunscreen, even. Or a hat.
Yeah.
Any of the above. Well, that was a man on a leash railing against the two-party system.
Yeah, you see that sometimes in West Hollywood, where I live.
Rare in Pasadena.
Very rare.
I want to ask all the libertarians where all the female libertarians are. Why don't they have any female friends? Oh my god, we just made it inside.
Dear god in heaven.
They had to put the panels, or push all the panels back half an hour.
And, well, we're here listening to Gary Johnson, and he really is a man who makes all the sense in the world, until he makes zero sense at all.
Tell our listeners what you just did.
I just bought Bernie rolling papers.
Brent, the first person I think of when I think of rolling papers.
Yeah, hashtag blaze for Bernie.
I think people are being real careful about being too paternalistic and condescending to younger voters who are smart people as well, and they can figure out who they are.
Older white men cautioning us against being too paternalistic. Classic.
I'm about to fulfill one of my very bizarre lifelong dreams, which is to be in the same room as Ann Coulter.
We're doing it. We're living our best lives right now.
This is
2016.
It.
Apparently, we're supposed to vote for Trump because he raised his children and they haven't murdered him yet.
Low bar.
Surprising number of people here also in favor of a dictatorship. Observations from the Trump panel.
Ann Coulter just quoted Joseph Stalin. Followed by Sally Cohen for the first time saying, well, this is where I agree with you.
What's happening right now? Where are we?
Now we've just heard a very clumsy scab metaphor that relies on an opposite understanding of how scabs work. This is the alternate reality of the Trump panel at Politicon.
Okay,
we're
about to be in the most exciting panel, agreed on by everyone.
Right, exactly.
Of the day.
Everyone's here.
Everyone's here. Ann Coulter, Van Jones, thousands of people, a really long line in which we waited with a Trump supporter who debated us the entire time.
We didn't know he was a Trump supporter until the very
late
end.
Late reveal.
It was a big late reveal. It was a very, like, M. Night Shyamalan moment.
It was like a horror movie, but he didn't try to murder us. That was a surprise.
Thankfully.
Instead, we just had, I think, a constructive conversation.
I know. He seemed more thoughtful than I would have expected.
I know.
Which is upsetting, actually.
Yeah, he just seemed sort of like enamored with an America that doesn't exist.
Well, yes.
In any case, we cannot wait. The next hour of our lives are going to be defining in every possible way.
That's right.
So, get ready.
Yeah.
Like many Sunday mornings, Brent is on his way to church.
That's right, but it's not the church I normally go to.
It's not the church he normally goes to, and I'm for once attending with him.
Yes, it is the church of Sarah Palin at Politicon.
We are going to an 11:30 service one Sarah Palin. We're wondering why she didn't have to be in church. But that's
how we decided that's where we were going, was because we were like, how is she speaking on Sunday morning?
And then we realized she probably thinks she is a church.
That's right, yes.
So wish us luck. Politicon.
Day two.
Democracy Village.
Here we go.
Walked in just in time to see Clay Aiken entering.
Yep, still looks as weird as you would think. Also, he's a politician now, so that's another thing that's weird.
That's
that
real
situation.
Life, you guys. Real life. Well, we finally got our gold uterus tattoos from Lady Parts Justice.
This is as close to a uterus as I've ever been.
So we're in the main hall waiting for Sarah Palin
Sarah Palin. She's
already late.
A fascinating
development is that she has
teleprompters
set up. As if anything she's ever said has made enough sense to come off a teleprompter.
I know. If we hear the type of thing that we normally hear from Sarah Palin, and it's because she was reading it, that is going to blow my damn mind.
Yeah. There she is. Let's see her. You see her in real life. Oh my God. Sarah Palin is literally getting on stage right now. This is real life.
She has papers.
It's already everything I could have hoped for.
Yes.
Well, we just heard Sarah Palin speak.
Yeah, and like, that speech was like, I mean, you know, I feel like children might be taught that speech.
It was one of America's great speeches.
It really was. It's like the Gettysburg Address.
To a realization, which is that Sarah Palin is just a frustrated slam poet. She's one of the great slam poets.
Even her, I said to you,
American
like,
history.
When you started saying that, and then I had it in my brain, it's like, even her cadence and her like whole delivery was like,
I don't know if the poetry was good, but her performance was amazing.
No.
Okay, so we just came back from lunch.
Back from lunch.
Ran into Michael Steele in lobby.
Chilling in the lobby.
Yep. He's very tall. And now we're about to go try to give out all of our postcards.
That's right.
We usually fail at this, so stay tuned. Just taught Brent to use the Repost app for Instagram.
/ Instagram in general.
Instagram in general. Lesson of the moment.
We're adults.
We're adults, and they can't make us sit anywhere we don't want to sit.
That's right. Open up Repost. There it is. Oh, server error. Get real.
Okay, we're about to start the Democrats.
Post-Obama Democrats. Repost. Copy to Instagram. I'm getting it. Next, write a caption. I'm gonna paste this one. I'm gonna delete all this garbage. Nobody wants that.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Boom. Did it.
Posted.
Did it.
Success.
If Paul Begala tells me that Bernie Sanders voted the same as Hillary Clinton 93% of the time, the 3 years they were together in the Senate, I'm literally going to chuck something at his head.
If he lectures me about how Bernie supporters need to be less patronizing to Hillary supporters, I will do the same.
Great. Good.
We'll update. So we just walked in to the James Carville, Sarah Palin.
It is packed.
It's packed in here.
I will say that.
Yeah. This is clearly the main event
of the
day.
That's because probably people got the word about the amazingness of the Sarah Palin speech.
If you missed the speech this morning, I have seen live streams of it available on Twitter.
Oh yeah, we mentioned that you should watch that.
You should absolutely watch it. We're still reeling from it. So one of the more confounding elements of the Sarah Palin James Carville panel is that Sarah Palin is more articulate without a teleprompter somehow.
She's the only person in the world that could possibly be the case for.
Well, we left Politicon.
We did it.
Another
came,
year.
Saw. Conquered.
That's right. Look for us next year at our own panel,
right,
Politicon?
Come on.
Pull your shit together.
Yeah.
You want us. Yeah, you want us. Of course you want us. See you next year.
Bye.
So there you have it. Fun times had
fun,
by all.
Right?
I mean,
you should really go next year if it's, well, who knows where it'll be. It's been in LA both years, so it seems like maybe that's a thing. But
Go.
Definitely go. It's a good time.
It was unfortunate that it happened to I mean, maybe fortunate, but unfortunate for us as people that have to do a podcast, that it happened to coincide with, like, the biggest news week in world history.
And as Lyle and I were saying earlier, all of these are news stories that, unless you're living under, like, an actual rock, you have heard.
Yeah.
So we're going to give you some of the things that we found interesting of them and some commentary that we have of them, but we're going to try and keep, you know, our coverage of them to the bare minimum. To a minimum, because, like, you heard about Brexit.
Exactly. You might, like almost everyone, not quite understand what on earth happened.
Right. I learned a lot in the aftermath of this.
And I think that it can basically be boiled down to the Trump movement of Britain won.
It totally can.
I mean, that's basically what we saw here.
Yes.
So, and it was close vote. It was 52-48.
Yep.
And some British territories or UK territories that are not Britain themselves or are not England themselves voted to remain. And now, so now there's a little bit of a discussion about what happens with Scotland, where you remember Scotland had a referendum fairly recently and voted to remain in the UK.
In the UK.
Partially because they wanted to stay in the EU.
Yeah.
They're talking about maybe having another referendum vote where they talk about
maybe
potentially
seceding from the UK so they can stay in the UK. That was one of the things that I found fascinating about this, which I didn't realize, because it seems like Scotland and potentially Ireland are going to do that.
Well, Northern Ireland is oddly talking. I mean, there are discussions happening in the media cycle, I don't know, at the political level, about whether they could potentially join regular Ireland again.
Right, yeah.
Which, and if this is the thing that brings unity to Ireland, that'd be fascinating, too. If it was just like a wrong-headed vote by British old idiots.
I know.
Because some interesting things about this. So the turnout was huge. The turnout was
72%.
Like 72%.
Which is crazy. Like 30 million
more
people
than 30 voted, million people showed up. It was
the most since 1982.
It was sort of like the U.S. Democratic primary in the sense that all old people voted one way and all young people seemed to vote another way.
Totally.
The vote to remain was heavily skewed to young voters. Yeah. The vote to secede was heavily skewed towards older voters. And so there's now a lot of discussion within the EU about whether, you know, old voters sort of sold out their children over fears that were unfounded and discomfort. And like we have in America, this sort of sense that they're going back to a Britain that never existed and can't exist anymore.
Right.
So the EU in general, because in the United States, we know that the EU exists.
Right.
I don't know that many of us know how it's organized.
No, exactly.
It's up to 28 countries, which is a number that keeps growing because they keep letting in states in farther into Eastern Europe. And, you know, there are always discussions about how far kind of into the Middle East or into almost the Middle East they can extend.
Yeah.
But basically, it's almost like they've modeled it after the U.S. state system, where it's essentially designed to be a single market where there's no tariffs between countries and there's sort of free trade and movement between borders.
So goods, services, people, money can all move between those 28 countries as if they're not separate countries.
Correct. And we talked a little bit during the "this is a coup" hashtag Greek debt crisis about what that ends up meaning for some of the poorer states. But that's really what we've been focused on.
Right.
Britain is the second richest state in the EU currently. And so this is a very different kind of situation than what you saw when we heard talk of countries like Spain or Greece seceding.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And the reason that people are comparing it to the Trump movement here in America is the borders.
Yes.
Because
this was driven by fears of refugees.
Right, exactly.
Almost exclusively.
Because so many other countries in the EU, specifically Germany, you know, are letting in these
refugees
Muslim refugees.
Syrian refugees.
Syrian refugees.
There's a civil war going on there
and
other parts of the Middle
East. They are able to move freely to all of the countries. So England was able to get enough people terrified that they might get some refugees coming into their country to make this a thing. And that's the parallel.
This is like if we were in California allowing refugees to come in from Mexico and then Oregon got pissed off.
Right, exactly.
And Oregon decided they weren't America anymore because they didn't want California to be taking refugees in the midst of a crisis.
Right.
I mean, it's sort of like that.
Yeah.
But it's not quite like that because, first of all, Britain never adopted the European currency. They have kept their financial markets independent to an extent.
Right.
And they also, I think, you know, they're an island nation. And so they have antagonistic relationships with a lot of countries in Europe that go back hundreds and hundreds of years.
Sure.
And so there has never been the kind of, unity in Europe that exists with the U.S. states, where we are kind of stuck with each other. We make fun of Mississippi a lot. We don't like them very much.
Right.
Do I think that Mississippi should leave the Union? Not really. You know, I would like Mississippi to vote in a smarter way. I would like them to stop misusing our tax dollars.
I was
going
to say, I would like them to have some taxes that they themselves have to pay that might pay for some of their own services.
Correct.
That would be lovely.
Suggesting that at the basic level, California taxpayers shouldn't have a responsibility towards Mississippi citizens? No, of course not.
Right.
We understand that part of our problem, not problem, part of our burden in the U.S. is taking care of idiots in other states.
That's
American.
That's what we do as Californians.
We all kind of acknowledge to a general degree that in America we're Americans.
Yeah.
And they don't have the same sort of national unity behind the European Union. And so it's been hard in the past for, there's been issues with member states who disagree on sort of, and have sort of different cultural values about certain things. And I think that's part of where this started.
Yeah.
But the fears really got stoked by far right politicians who have been advocating this position for a while, but saw an opening
here. Conservative Party that has been really pushing for this.
And there's a lot of blame to be laid on the feet of David Cameron for even allowing this vote to go forward.
Yeah.
And he's going to resign. He said he's going to resign by October.
Right. And it seems like Boris Johnson, who was like the big head of the Leave campaign, who is the former mayor of London, is probably sort of like the best situated right now to become the next prime minister.
Yeah.
Right.
So there's some interesting things, though, about this referendum vote. The first being that it's not legally binding.
Right.
Parliament still has to pass the laws that actually get Britain out of the EU. And they have to invoke an agreement called Article 50 of the Lisbon Treaty that begins the succession process.
Right. They're supposed to be done within 2 years.
Right. But only once they invoke Article 50. So if they wait 7 years to invoke Article 50, which a lot of member states are saying they want them to do it immediately, but Angela Merkel recently came out and was like, I don't know.
Just take care of it at some point.
Right, exactly.
When you get around to it.
Once they invoke Article 50, they have 2 years to withdraw.
Yeah.
Before they invoke Article 50, though, they can sit on that for the rest of time if they want to. And so there are certain members of, I think, both the far right and the far left, but specifically the far left, that were in favor of succeeding from the EU, but want to wait to invoke Article 50 so that they can negotiate at a more leisurely pace, because they're going to suddenly have to negotiate border patrols and tariffs and other boring economic things with all these member states, with 28 or 27 member states.
Well, and there's so many questions as to whether, I mean, are they still a part of this trade agreement that they have with them?
Like, kick them out of the trade agreement if they leave.
Do they then have to have a trade agreement separately with the EU? There's also a trade agreement going on with the EU and the United States right now that's being negotiated.
Now they have to negotate a separate treaty with the United States?
And these are, there's so many unanswered questions here, which is why a lot of people were pissed about this, because nobody knows what's going to happen. It's never been done.
Article 50 has only existed since 2009.
Well, right. And a country has never
No country's ever left the EU.
No, right. Yeah.
And that's because it's a foolhardy thing to do, you idiots.
Yeah. So it'll be
a lot of great talk.
Right.
This was a moment where I felt a little smug, because I was like, we've been hearing all sorts of shit from all sorts of countries about the idiots that are voting for Trump.
I was kind of like, you have them too. Right.
They're everyone's problem.
That was a big American meme the next morning.
Yeah.
That was sort of like, okay, we don't have to be the laughingstock anymore.
Exactly.
Because, like, obviously you guys got this one wrong.
Yeah. And I mean, this is something that exists inside of every country. Obviously, we're showing it in a stupider way than many countries are choosing to.
Right.
But I mean, this was a massively stupid move on the part of British. And there was also, there was a lot of regret the day after.
Tons
of
regret.
The stock market crashed immediately. The pound crashed immediately. It was like they woke up and they were like no longer the superpower they thought they would be.
A lot of people that were interviewed were, you know, people were treating this as like a protest vote.
Yes.
And they weren't necessarily like thinking about ramifications.
No one thought, because that was why the markets crashed, is because no one thought they would actually vote this way. They knew the vote was close.
Right.
But also we kind of were like, how do you poll something like this? Like, what the hell is going on?
I know.
But so no one really thought that they would actually vote to leave, because that's a foolhardy idiot move.
Yeah. Foolhardy, word of the day.
It was foolhardy. Foolhardy was the word of the day. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, in any case, everyone was sort of shocked by this outcome.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone.
The pound went to garbage
to some degree,
the next morning.
A lot of the people who voted to leave were shocked by the outcome, because
they
thought they were protest voting. It was like people that voted for Trump as a protest vote.
Yeah.
The Trump movement started as a protest vote.
Yeah, for sure.
The Sanders movement started as a protest vote.
Both of them still sort of are. Yeah.
But it's like it does show you that if the voting counts. Your vote counts.
That's right. Oh, God. Sorry. I got so excited.
Yeah.
I knocked the
table.
Sorry about that.
But so In any case, there are also questions about what will happen to British nationals who are in Europe once this process is sort of underway, because, for example, they have agreements with other countries about, you know, that provide, where they provide health care.
Okay, right. There's a lot of expats who aren't necessarily citizens of other countries, but are Brits living in, let's say, Spain. They have a deal with Spain where they can use free Spanish health care, and then the NHS
reimburses
Britain's, you know, healthcare system reimburses Spain or the hospital or whatever for their healthcare. Does that still exist? So you've got all these expats who are living in places who are, who are like, do we have healthcare?
What happens
so
now?
So that's not great.
Yeah, it's not one of the great, it's not one of the great things.
No.
But so, in any case, this was the big story of the week.
Right.
So big that a lot of people in Britain decided the next day they better Google
what
the EU
is. They should
figure
out what they voted for. Yeah. Yeah.
So everyone votes in this massive protest vote that was one of the most confusing days in British history.
Then results started to roll in.
Results started to roll in, and everyone was like, what the hell is going on? What are we, are we voting to leave?
Right.
So in the middle of the night, Google reports
8 hours after the polls,
The polls have closed, and results are becoming clear that leave is going to win.
Yeah.
Google reports that searches hugely spiked for what happens if we leave the EU. And in second place was, what is the EU? Come on.
Do better. That's not it. Yeah.
But find out what you're... And listen, I get it. We have like 500 propositions on the ballot every time we go to the polls here, and we hate it.
It's, we talk about it all the time.
It's so hard to figure out. It's a lot of work to figure out what they mean.
Right.
Every side is lying to you. There's no way to know what any of them really are.
But you do it or you don't vote.
But you do it. Not even, you do it.
Well, you do it. Right.
You gotta vote.
But you find out
what the hell is going on.
But there are, not always, but there are times when I have walked in and like, oh, I forgot that I had to pick 94 judges.
Right.
Like, so I would prefer to just not because I'm not trying to pick the wrong judges, because that's a disaster zone. But like,
even when you try
you know,
to pick
like
judges,
this,
you're picking the wrong judges. It's
you
can't win.
You had one job here.
Yeah.
I mean, this was.
And it was like all anyone was talking about.
Right.
And it was also, but it was, I mean, I think to some degree it was part of this modern news cycle. It was why young voters had different information than old voters, just like we have in the States now. You know, we have young voters hearing about stuff on social media. They have a much more interactive and way of participating in the process.
Yeah.
Old voters hear stuff on sort of corporate owned big media, and that doesn't always give you all the facts,
as we
learned from our time with Sarah Palin, Ann Coulter, and everyone else that we saw
and
at Politicon.
And that really good panel that had, what's her name, Anna
Kasparian. Oh, yeah, Anna Kasparian,
right?
Yeah.
Who was awesome. Because
from
she
the Young Turks,
was,
she's,
the,
yeah. I mean,
killing
a dream.
It. I mean,
she's
she is
killing
an
it daily.
Dream.
The Young Turks, by the way, had so many fans at Politicon that it was almost not to be believed. It is like a phenomenon.
We were in the panel with Vicente Fox today, which was in the large room. And in the room next to us were the Young Turks and Dinesh D'Souza, who I can't stand the sight of.
But yeah.
But like, there was like,
I've never heard cheers like.
There was like at one point where we were like, holy shit, what's going on over there? And we looked at the book, and Lila was like, the Young Turks just arrived.
Yep.
Like,
that they had a line after, like, they literally had a line out the door of people who couldn't get in to that panel.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and it was just like,
it was
Dinesh
like
D'Souza and them
like
showing like a weird
a
trailer.
A movie trailer.
It was so
like,
weird.
What? It wasn't, it was like a very head scratching panel, but like,
but it was like, and everyone in line had a Young Turks t-shirt. Like, it was madness. So, in any case.
Yeah.
That's what's going on in the world. And you
that's
know
right.
we hate international news, but
ugh,
this
we hate it.
Really
this
hit close to home.
It did hit close
because
to home.
This is something that we're going through right now ourselves.
Yeah.
So, and I think actually this
and
will have a positive
guys,
impact on our presidential election.
I think so too. As like, you know, Van Jones actually tweeted like a video that got watched a lot of times the next day where he was sort of flipping the fuck out and was like, guys, Brexit, Donald Trump can win.
Yeah. And he said this
he
at Politicon.
He said it at Politicon too. And I think that like we should all be, this is a cautionary tale.
Yeah.
Everyone. Like,
well, and it's, I think it's a cautionary tale for both sides, because on the left, we can be like, oh, fuck, people will vote for something this stupid. They don't always know.
Right.
And on the right, they can be like, oh, fuck, if we vote for something this stupid, our economy will literally crash the next
day. Right. Yeah.
Like, because that's,
which is what would happen
that's
if we elect
a lot
Donald
of
Trump president.
Well-meaning working class people woke up in Britain the next day and were like, what did
I do? Yeah, exactly.
And that's what could, that's what would happen here.
Yeah.
So in any case,
yeah.
Moving on to,
back
to domestic news.
Yeah.
We are having, it's like the gun control wars 2016.
And they are really
they're heating
serving
up.
It.
Yes.
Big time.
The Democrats finally
like the,
were like,
it's like the Battle of the Bastards on Game of Thrones last week in the
if
Senate
I
and the House.
Knew
right
what
now.
You were talking about, I would agree with
you
100%.
Currently, right, my mind is on Game of Thrones right now because it's the finale is currently being watched
downstairs
from
where we're recording
from
this.
Where I'm recording with my roommate
and
his
I'm
boyfriend.
Feeling and, fine about it. I feel no stress at all about the outcome of Game of Thrones. Right. Brent seems to feel differently. That's fine. In any case, so we know that there was that massive Chris Murphy filibuster in the Senate last week.
Right. And then we know that on, it was Friday, I believe, they voted down
all four. No, it was on Monday, I believe.
No, because we talked last week on the podcast. Remember, they voted all four of those measures down. But then there were rumblings of a compromise vote, which this week we finally got around to.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Susan Collins has a quote-unquote compromise bill that has bipartisan support.
Right.
They had a test vote this week.
Yes.
A test vote is like a fake vote where they try to pass something just to see if there's enough people to pass it.
Right, exactly.
It did pass, but it didn't meet the 60-vote threshold. It basically just bans people who are on the no-fly list or another list that is similar to the no-fly list where you sort of have to go through extra security from buying guns.
Right, and if you're wondering why it's a compromise bill because you're like, hey, they voted on that last week and they voted it down, the issue that the Republicans and supposedly the NRA were having with it
ironically
was because it didn't have due process in it. Because apparently what we've learned here, and I didn't realize this, but is that the no-fly list is apparently
pretty questionable,
less than imperfect.
Well, this is something the left was actually saying as well, is they were saying the Democrats have gone to the mat for a terrible bill. And
So what the Republicans were trying to get in there was that
the architects of the no-fly list are suddenly very, very worried about who's
sucks.
On it.
Yeah, I know, exactly. So what they wanted was for someone who goes to buy a gun and then finds out they're on the no-fly list to be able to go to court and be like, I'm not supposed to be on this on this no-fly list? I want to get a gun. I would also like to fly at some point, maybe, perhaps.
Sure.
This bill now has that in it. So I don't know what they're voting against.
This is the most hilarious. This is literally a party that's just like coming apart at the seams.
Oh, totally.
The Republican Party created the no-fly list. They're the architects of all of our crazy security policy of the last decade or 2 decades
since 2011. They're why we couldn't take a sealed water bottle into Politicon this weekend.
Correct. Like, so for them to suddenly be like, there's no due process and the no-fly list is flawed is rich. Real rich.
Agreed.
And so that's just them picking it. Grasping its straws.
Yeah, the other thing that it would do, it would mandate notification to law enforcement if someone who was on a broader terrorism watch list within the past 5 years to buy a gun. And the reason that that's in there is because the Orlando shooter had been on a watch list in 2013 and in 2014, but was taken off when the FBI closed the case on him, which was in late 2014.
Right, so that's another very minor measure that's a common sense measure that apparently people can't be commonsensical about.
And a lot of people loved to go around saying like, well, if you know, the bills that they were trying to pass in the Senate wouldn't have stopped this guy from getting a gun, this particular one would have.
Yes. Or at least would have put everyone on high alert when he did get a gun.
Right.
P.S. If your problem is that the lists that they're using are not effective enough, let's do some background checks.
I mean,
for God's sakes.
Yeah.
In any case, they need 6 flips to get this bill passed.
Right, because they had 52
votes.
They
had 52.
Bernie Sanders and Dianne Feinstein weren't there, so that's 54.
Right.
And don't get all worked up about yourselves.
It was a test vote, you guys.
It was a test vote. It wasn't a real thing. They were just seeing how many votes they were. It wasn't anything. It was nothing. So it seems unlikely that they're going to add 6 GOP
votes
to this.
But who knows? Because it's been fucking wild in the gun control world recently.
Because there were more
shenanigans.
The House
finally took their place as the people's house and did something fucking bonkers that was amazing.
Because the House can't filibuster anything.
They have time debates in the House. They have limited debates. You can't just go on at length. If you're in the House.
There's decorum. You can't interrupt. You know, you just like, it's not like Parliament. You can't just like go in there and start screaming at people.
But here's the thing. It could be because there's like a million members of the House and they're the people's House.
There's 400 of them. If they all wanted to shout at the same time, I would be in favor of that.
Yeah. The Senate was there to represent landowners. That was why we created the Senate, was to represent land. The House is here to represent us. And the House can be rowdy if they choose to be rowdy. If 50% of the House decides to be rowdy, it gets pretty fucking rowdy in there.
Yeah.
I've been on the House, in the House gallery when they've gotten rowdy, and it's amazing.
Fun, I bet. Yeah.
I went to watch them vote on the 9/11
health bill.
There was like a very exciting round of applause and cheering situation that went on there.
Yeah.
And you've seen people in the House go nuts. Anthony Weiner was beloved by me despite being an asshole because he would go nuts on the floor of the House, and it was great to watch.
Yeah.
So in any case, the House was like, what are we going to do about this gun control situation? We can't filibuster.
John Lewis was like,
wait a minute. I was elected because I'm a fucking civil rights leader. I can figure this out.
Yeah.
And led a 26-hour sit-in on the floor of the House. And it was not just historic because it was a sit-in on the floor of the House.
Right.
That has sort of happened before. The Republicans tried to do that at one point and
Nancy Pelosi sat there for
3 days with the lights out,
right,
which was
Nancy
weird.
Nancy Pelosi, like, turned the lights
out and left.
I think
in 95...
It was over a ridiculous reason, too. I mean, it was, like...
It was an energy bill. It was something about wanting to drill in the Arctic. Yeah. And then in 95, I think the Democrats tried something similar, but this was definitely the first, the most sort of, like, elaborate plan that they had ever hatched.
Yeah.
So, basically, John Lewis and a bunch of other senators, including Congresspeople, and including Representative Clark was also from Massachusetts, also helped him with this. Yeah. I can remember that because Lewis and Clark is the moniker they were going by. She didn't get much credit for this, but she was the person who actually...
She probably doesn't care.
She was the person who came to him and was like, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
And he was like, we're going to do a sit-in on the floor of the House, because that's what you do when shit goes wrong and there's nothing you can do about it. So they start the sit-in. The pictures are amazing. Everyone's super psyched.
Right.
Suddenly, the C-SPAN feed cuts out because Paul Ryan declared a recess.
Right, and the cameras aren't on during recess.
Right. The cameras are not controlled by C-SPAN. They're controlled by the House of Representatives and the House Speaker.
Right.
The House Speaker, when he declares a recess, automatically triggers the cameras being shut off. So the cameras are shut off. And suddenly they're like, what are we doing here? No one can see us.
Yeah.
So some staff members of some heroic Congress people...
Yeah.
Scott Peters, for one, who was sort of like the leader in this movement of of self videographers,
yes.
Some staff members of his were like, download Periscope.
Yeah,
he downloads Periscope. He doesn't know what he's doing.
No.
He just fucking puts that thing on, and suddenly we have like
the world has
the world has it.
Yeah.
So some Twitter's going bonkers.
This is not legal.
It's illegal.
But
and so,
who cares?
And so the sergeant of arms comes to him and is like, this is not legal. You have to turn this off. So he turns it off. And then he takes a few surreptitious videos. And then he realizes that it's getting huge traction on the internet.
Yeah.
So finally he's just like, fuck it.
Screw
and then some other people start doing it too. Cause they're like, the hell are we doing here? If we can't, I mean, this is a sit-in on the floor of the House. We're already breaking the law. Whatever.
Right.
So
let's watch this.
C-SPAN picks up the feed, which I think is the most rebellious thing I've seen C-SPAN ever do. It was so exciting. C-SPAN picks up the feed. Finally, we're getting full coverage from multiple angles, depending on whose camera you're watching. Of the proceedings. Twitter is going nuts. Facebook Live is in the business all of a sudden. They're going nuts. Mm-hmm. This is sort of an unprecedented moment in Periscope / Facebook Live / live streaming
history.
We've
never seen this
in
the House.
No, we've seen this happen at Occupy. We've seen this happen during Arab Spring. There have been moments where we've had live streaming be an integral part of the process. But this is the first time that an Occupy tactic has so openly become a part of real government.
Yeah.
So in any case, he is suddenly getting all sorts of responses, including advice on, this is Scott Peters, advice on how to better hold the camera, what, you know, like what angles would be most effective, how to clean the lens. Tammy Duckworth is in there, like literally sitting on the floor. As you know, she has no legs. So she was literally just sitting on the floor off her wheelchair in order to sit in.
Yeah.
Amazing. And it just keeps growing. Suddenly, senators are down there. Cory Booker's down there.
Bernie
Chris
Sanders
Murphy gets
over
down
there.
There.
Elizabeth
Al
Warren
Franken.
Went over there.
Liz Warren came and brought donuts.
I was going to say, other senators sent food over.
Yeah, the senator from Hawaii brought a bunch of snacks as well.
Yeah.
So suddenly, it's like everyone wants to be at the House. And then they throw a big press conference outside where C-SPAN can get access. But C-SPAN, basically, for something like 8 or 9 hours, just ran Periscope coverage. So Paul Ryan is like, we're going to outsmart them. We're going to go in there and
we're
force them to
take
votes. Turns out, it's pretty easy to take a vote in the House while a protest is going on.
You just walk right in. He walked in.
They vote electronically.
Right.
They said, we're voting on the thing. Everyone went and voted while protesting.
While protesting.
And then
while screaming, no bill, no break.
That was the hashtag of the moment.
Because they were about to go on break.
Right.
Like
for the 4th of July.
After the 4th of July.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So they're screaming, and at
they're
one point
we shall overcome.
Well,
for God's sake,
the like, most amazing moment was so when he came in to do to carry out votes, C-SPAN goes back on, and suddenly we have the same. So we have the same screen we always see on C-SPAN with them counting the vote
the
totals,
grid with the, yay,
the grid,
nay,
the and
nonsense.
Then it's like a wide shot of the House.
Yeah,
and in the background you see a mass of senators on the floor singing "We Shall Overcome" as they vote on some dumb Paul Ryan bill that nobody wants to have passed.
Nobody cared about,
No. So finally he's like, okay, this is not working.
No.
So he leaves again. The cameras go off. Periscope goes back on.
Right.
We spend another zillion hours. Finally, in the middle of the night, he's like, whatever, we're going on recess.
Recess.
So he declares a recess. They stay there for a few more hours because they wanted to make it past 24 hours. For 26 hours, they sat in on the floor of the House providing live streaming coverage from their own phones.
It's Democrats with a backbone, man.
I mean, this is... But, by the way, I mean, I was saying this to my mother. I was like, you know, it is it is getting to the point where Republicans maybe won't lose their job over this. Maybe their districts are gerrymandered in such a way that they won't lose their jobs. It's getting to the point where Democrats are going to lose their job if they don't fucking figure out what to do.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's what I think they were responding to.
Yeah.
Is they were like, you know, Republicans, you know, we're in a gridlock right now, but part of it is that we're also adhering to these rules that aren't benefiting us.
Yeah.
And this is actually outrageous. Yeah. This is like an unacceptable reality.
And the thing that I think that is different about this is that in politics all the time, we see a lot of grandstanding.
Yeah.
We see a lot of, you know, people declaring that they stand for something when we either know that they don't, or when they pretend to care about issues that matter to middle class America when we know that they don't.
Yeah.
This felt like
sincere.
It felt sincere, yeah. I guess. And like,
well,
everyone just got up and told a story about how
gun violence had personally touched them.
You just rarely get that in American politics at all these days. So I think that's what, at least for me, was like really hitting me, that was that it felt like they had really finally decided that like this was actually too important to America to like do something about. And like, that's just rare, which is sad. It's rare, but it is.
I think Scott Peters said that he had 2 million views on his site. C-SPAN, I think, had 1 million views. Millions of people tuned in online to watch this. This was that's massive.
Yeah.
That's unusual.
Yeah.
So this was a very big deal.
Yeah, for some nobody house person who just like happened to download Periscope.
Can you tell me anything about Scott Peters, including what state he's even from?
No one can.
I have no idea.
No.
But I mean, we literally saw every single house member who's worth a damn get up. Yep. And there was a great moment where Keith Ellison tweeted that he'd been in a meeting with somebody and someone came in with a note that said, "Your mom called. She wants you on the floor."
Oh, that's good.
So it was pretty epic. And they say Occupy didn't do anything.
I know,
and
right?
They say Occupy didn't offer anything to the American people.
Uh-huh.
They were wrong. I'm like the Republicans talking about the man. Uh-huh. In any case, one of the great benefits of the timing of this sit-in was that it preempted this dumb Trump speech that was about to suck up the whole news cycle.
Right, exactly.
And so thankfully, no one really had to watch the speech.
Right.
We're here to tell you what was said.
Right.
Use your imagination. You almost definitely know what was said.
Yeah. It was like a Sarah Palin speech, but less interesting because it was...
And the slam poetry was less beautiful.
Yeah, exactly.
She really, if she could just put her mind to it, she could be America's poet laureate. I'm so disappointed that we didn't give that as an option to her before she got to run for office.
I know. I don't think that she knew. She's gotten better at it, too. She's gotten better and worse at it. I don't know if that's possible.
She's a great poet. She's not a great politician or a great political orator. Yeah. She didn't make a damn lick of sense the entire time.
No.
That was a Brentism that I just used because it was just like, I felt folksy because I was talking about Sarah Palin. But she... had the sort of cadence of her speech.
The performance quality was there. Yeah.
She could do slam poetry, and she could be one of the few people that makes a living as a poet.
I agree.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
In any case, Trump doesn't really have that quality because, unlike Sarah Palin, who makes up a lot of the words, so she does have the best words, Donald Trump has very few words.
Right, exactly. Yes.
He called Clinton a world-class liar. What a shock.
Uh-huh.
But then was talking about the things we already know she sort of lied about, like the emails,
server,
you know,
and
the
phony
landing
in
Bosnia,
which you talked about in 2008, which we realized that didn't actually happen because there was video of it. So he, I guess, got her there. But I don't know
if getting her there is a thing. Right, he accused her of running the State Department like a hedge fund, which I guess if that was a thing that you could do, she would have probably done. But it's just not.
Mean,
what does that have any? What does that mean at all?
Yeah.
I mean, it hurts my head.
I know. I can't process that.
He talked about how she won't release the transcripts. # release the transcripts, for God's sakes.
I know. Yeah, exactly.
Like, if we're united with Donald Trump on something, that's a bad scene.
Yeah, he also hilariously defended his business record and recalled that he began his career in Brooklyn with a small loan and built a business worth more than $10 billion.
Two problems with that.
Two big problems with that.
One of the problems is that his small loan was for
$1 million. $1 million.
And that was like... years ago. That was not... that was in the 70s or 80s.
Right, exactly.
That was
so
not
in today's
recent
money,
$1 million.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
And also, there is not one person other than Donald Trump himself who believes that he is worth even half of $10 billion.
Correct.
So...
he's literally making up a net worth that sounds impressive.
I feel like within
do.
This campaign, he has said eight, hasn't he?
Yes.
Right? No. I mean, like, it's a
like
real
many
moving
issues,
target.
He's on a lot of different sides of this one.
Yeah.
He talked about free trade. He talked about Clinton's support of NAFTA. He talked about China being in the WTO as some sort of sign that Clinton's bad for American workers and how our trade deficit with China has soared under her tenure of Secretary of State. I don't know what as Secretary of State she necessarily had to do with that, but okay.
Yeah.
Managed to fit in some blame for
blamed her personally
for Ambassador Stevens' death in Benghazi.
Right.
Why not fit that in?
He seemed to kind of change his tone on Muslims, which was sort of interesting, but also, like, I'm sure this is going to be
a moving target situation as well.
He has had, much like his stance on abortion, where we covered a couple months ago, where he was on, like,
five different sides of the issue within
36 hours. He said, ISIS also threatens peaceful Muslims across the Middle East and peaceful Muslims across the world who have been terribly victimized by horrible brutality and who only want to raise their kids in peace and safety. That is not the same Donald Trump that...
No.
We heard well, maybe as he recently
that,
as probably days
maybe
ago.
Maybe he thinks that Muslims are fine as long as they're elsewhere.
Elsewhere,
right. I mean, maybe he's fine with Muslims being everywhere else but
we
here.
We realize that you are being threatened by ISIS right now, peaceful Muslims of the world. But please stay in whatever part of the world that you are
stay in the danger and fight it out.
I guess
we
you
don't want
those
you.
Two things yeah, in your I think brain
that
he's, at the same
I
time.
I think that if you're Donald Trump, you certainly can. He doesn't. He lacks empathy. So it's not like he could be like, oh, I feel bad because these people are being... threatened by governments that we or by people that we gave rise to by destabilizing their government.
Right, exactly.
I mean, you know, that's too long of a track for him to trace.
Yeah, he also argued that Clinton was the most corrupt person ever to seek the presidency.
I can't imagine that could be true.
Right.
You guys, the founding fathers were up to shenanigans.
You know we don't like her.
But, yeah, I mean, we have, like, as people who have a very strong track record of being both suspicious of Clinton as a corrupt figure, and also disliking her policies on the face of it.
Yeah.
And mostly the latter, I guess. So we don't have any reason to say a kind word about her. This is a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah.
George Bush used to be the president, you might recall.
He also said one thing that he has repeated many times, and it's just plain
wrong. Literally wrong.
But he called the United States the highest tax nation in the world, and PolitiFacts has found about 30 countries that have higher tax rate structures than the United States, including Denmark, Luxembourg, Belgium, you know, a lot of the Scandinavian states. They're also the most happiest countries, by the way.
But let's not even get into that.
Yeah, but he claims this all the time, and it's just like...
It's like not flat out wrong.
It's flat out wrong. It's like, we're not even number one, we're like 31.
Yeah, we're not even in the top 10.
I was going to say, it's not as if we're number two.
We're not achieving
number one,
that.
And he's like flipped us around with somebody else. No. It's like... He's flipped us around with 30 other countries.
Speaking of things that have flipped around, California is currently, because of the British the sort of plight of modern Britain, now a bigger economy than the UK. And I feel like we're about, if we could just overtake France, depending on what year you look at, we do. We're in the top five.
I know. Well, and a lot of people are talking about Frexit. Too,
yeah.
By the way, because in public
the
polling,
first thing that happened was that Marie Le Pen was like, "We should do this too."
Right. Well, and in public polling in France, they have a higher percentage who want to leave than Britain did prior to their vote.
Yeah.
The referendum. Yeah. So that could be something.
I know. Well, this is you guys. I will say one thing about people's desire to leave the EU because I think it's stupid, but I also think you know what. Would I want to be the member of a union where Germany is the most powerful state?
Don't do
Certainly
that.
Certainly not.
Nope. You wouldn't.
That is like letting Texas be the most powerful state in the U.S. Nope. You don't do it.
Yeah.
Like, that. I can understand why Europeans are uneasy about the whole situation at the moment.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving back to Trump and his broke-ass campaign.
This, I think, is maybe my favorite story of this week, actually, because, like, it's so crazy. We found out this week, because they had to release their latest filings to the FEC, the Federal Elections Commission, and we found out that Trump raised just over $3 million in May. Clinton raised $26 million, by the way.
I also want to put in perspective beyond that, that Bernie Sanders regularly raised $3 million
in 24 hours. Yeah.
Just by saying something snippy.
Yeah. I mean, this is a low number for a month for a congressional campaign. And the thing that is shocking about it is that Ted Cruz dropped out in the first week of May, something like May 3rd or 4th or something like that. So he has had one job for all of May.
He's
He's running unopposed. The general election hasn't really started yet. Most people consider the convention sort of like the beginning of the general election campaign.
Yeah.
So
I think that's fair because that's the first time that we have candidates.
Right, exactly. He has
one job
in May and even in June and the first half of July. And that is to literally just go around and sock away money.
Just raising money everywhere.
Just raise money.
He has literally no other thing to do.
Go to every single living human and have them max out their $2,300 to your campaign.
Yeah.
And like that... That's it. Like, that's what you're supposed to
that's
be doing.
That's all you can do.
That's it.
He has what's he running against? He's not doing anything.
No.
He's not up to anything.
No.
So In any case, at the end of May,
$1.29 million in the bank.
He only has $1.29 million.
By comparison,
once again, that is low for a congressional campaign.
Right.
They run in a portion of your state,
right.
Of one state.
Yes. Ben Carson, a man who dropped out in March, ended May with $1.7 million cash on hand. So he has, Ben Carson, a man who dropped out 3 months ago, is a man with more money than Donald Trump.
Yes.
He has not been fundraising, obviously, since March. One
to put
anyway.
This in even the context of Republicans, because obviously they have big super PAC money on the Republican side,
right.
A lot of the time. But even Mitt Romney had $17 million in the
yeah.
bank at the end of May.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton started June with $42 million.
Yeah.
And it gets worse.
Yeah, because
hat plan?
Right. A lot of people have been suspect that this campaign is just like a giant scheme to begin with.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of facts in this FEC
because
report.
They were making money on the Make America Great Again hats.
Yes.
It was like a whole scheme to basically make money on
hats
initially.
Yeah, we talked about it on the podcast.
We talked about that months ago on the podcast.
So it appears as though, we mentioned that they raised $3 million and they have $1.29 on hand. That's because you have expenditures as a campaign, obviously. You have to go places. You have to, guess where all of their money was going? It was going to Trump organizations.
Yep.
It was going to Trump, his private jet. It was going to Trump's Mar-a-Lago because they probably had an event there.
It was going to Trump Restaurants LLC.
Trump Restaurants.
Catering.
Right, exactly. So basically all he's doing is going around. I mean, he's not fundraising very much, but the money that he is taking in to his campaign, he is paying back out to his own entities.
Yeah. And even the money that's not going directly to his entities is going into this great merchandising push, which
is
ultimately
owned by people who are friendly
to him. Who are friendly to him, including his son.
Right.
And is making money for them on the back end. So it's like the whole thing is literally a giant scheme to sell hats that say Make America Great Again.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think that we're going to also see, you know, he likes to talk about how rich he was, and we just talked about that a little bit ago.
Right.
But it's going to be interesting to see how much money he is actually willing to give his campaign. Because, you know, even let's say you are, you know, quote, worth $10 billion. Like, A, you're not. But B, like, all of his money is in real estate holdings.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, being worth $10 billion and having a checking account that you can write a $10 billion check to your campaign.
Two different things.
Are separate things.
Yeah.
Right. So we're going to, I think, going to see how much money he is actually willing to give himself to do this thing. And I don't think it's very much.
No, I don't think he has very much to give.
I don't think he has very much to give. And I think he's a man that likes his money too much to write it like to a losing campaign. I mean, he's not an idiot. I mean, well, he is an idiot, but I mean, he's not like...
He is a man who can go bankrupt, though.
Well, that's true.
He knows, if there's one thing he knows,
that's
and
true.
Knows well, it's going bankrupt.
Yeah.
So maybe this is a giant scheme to file Chapter 11 once again and rake in all that government money for doing that.
Yeah, but I think what should be worrisome to him and to his supporters is that, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, it's only June. You know, he gets a lot of free media. He still has time to fundraise. The problem is that between now and the convention is basically dead air.
Right.
Then you have the conventions, which usually cancel each other out. Also, the Democratic convention comes second. So they're going to get the second bump. So they're going to come out of those conventions ahead.
Bumpier.
Right. Exactly. And
then you got the Olympics.
Then the Olympics are 2 weeks. Nobody is going to pay attention to a Trump speech.
No,
during
the Olympics
are
the best time of the year.
Exactly.
Every time.
But then you're basically in September. We're going to talk about the polls in a second. He's down by 12 in one that just came out literally this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is
it's an ABC News, Washington Post.
There
poll.
Is
a
real poll. Chance that if he doesn't start loaning himself some big money or fundraising like a real candidate, which he has not wanted to do so far, that he could find himself in September down by 12 or 15 points and broke as a joke.
The GOP,
and at that point, you're hard pressed to come back from that at that point. Like you can't change that fast enough for November at that point. So yes, it's early, but it's also not early.
Yeah, I mean, the Republican National Campaign Committee has been trying to introduce him to donors and get super PAC money behind him and all this stuff. And it's
but
like
he hasn't been raising money
he
for
hasn't
them
been
either
raising
because
money
RNC,
for them.
The RNC also has much less money on hand than they did in 2012.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I mean, it's like a sinking ship on every end because they don't even like each other. If there's one thing we learned from Politicon,
I know.
It's that there is not a single establishment Democrat or Republican who can stand Donald Trump. Because we heard from a lot of party insiders from both parties. One of the nice things about Politicon is it's nonpartisan. And so you get a chance to hear from people you wouldn't normally get a chance to sit and listen
who
to.
Have, like,
who
have reasonable conversations with
reasonable conversations with each other. And it's you kind of realize that they're all in on it. And that's kind of disappointing. But I mean, it provides you with a chance to see some of those people in a forum where it's not just protesters or just excited people who don't, and they don't have to say anything. You know, they really have to talk about the issues. And we saw again and again that people who are mouthpieces of the Republican establishment could not say a nice thing about Donald Trump, could not stand what was happening to their party, saw this election year as a wash where they hoped to just not self-destruct entirely.
Yeah.
I mean, we heard that repeatedly.
Yeah, we did.
And the only people we didn't hear it from were far-right nutsos like Sarah Palin
and Ann Coulter.
Who, as you know, don't often make a lot of sense.
Right, and they don't deal with facts.
And they don't, they don't use facts to back up their logic. So, this is really a very concerning situation for them to find themselves in, especially as we said, there was an ABC News Washington Post poll that had Clinton up 12.
Right. There was another one that has her up 10.
Another one that had her up 10 that includes Johnson and Stein.
Right. So that 12 is not an outlier.
The 12 is not an outlier, and she only loses 2 points when you include Johnson and Stein.
There is another one that has Johnson and Stein between the two of them getting
NBC News,
16,
Wall Street Journal.
16%, which is huge.
Yeah.
And not surprising that 16% of the people in America don't want to vote for these two goons.
Of course
but regardless.
Not.
But that one only has her up 1. So I think that
but
could
their direct matchup has her up 5 at least. I mean that number is different than what we were seeing even a few
it's been much,
days ago.
Yeah, exactly.
And
this lead is growing.
Yeah, and on a state by state level, we have at Florida, CBS has her up 3 in Wisconsin, CBS has her up 5 in North Carolina, CBS has her up 2 in Colorado, they have her up 1. I mean,
if she wins North Carolina, I mean the whole thing is just like, I mean it could just be like total wash.
Exactly.
I mean, that's not
nobody's
expecting her to win North Carolina.
No.
Although she's been there recently, I think. Actually.
Yeah, I mean. Well, I mean, if the polls are looking like this, why not go there?
Go. Yeah.
And North Carolina is not natural Trump territory. There are some places that are. I would think Wisconsin would be natural Trump territory, but she's up 5 there, so what do I know?
Yeah.
But I mean, some of these places that are naturally Republican, I don't feel like necessarily connect to Trump in any way.
No.
Because we learned that the regular Republicans have no idea what they think of him.
No, they don't. Yeah.
And then, so the other thing that we started hearing more and more about this week was
the
Clinton Veep Stakes. We have three names of people that are being actively vetted. There's other people that are sort of like in the conversation, and sometimes they float names like this and then just sort of like see what people say and then they don't do anything about it later.
Yeah.
In an unsurprising turn of events, Julian Castro is one of the names.
Right, exactly.
We still caution against choosing one of the Castro brothers.
Right.
I don't
this
is
it.
Not the right year.
No, it's not the right year. And
they're
also,
they're not Obama.
No, they're not Obama. And I don't want to sound, like I'm, racist isn't the right word, but like you would put him on the ticket to be able to deliver a certain demographic.
Right.
And the Castros are people who don't speak Spanish.
Yeah.
By the way.
Right.
Like,
they're Stanford grads who don't speak Spanish.
You can't pick a guy from Texas who was born here of Cuban heritage that only speaks English if you're like trying to like make some sort of statement about the Latino community. Like that's just not, I get why he's on the list, but like also he's like, he doesn't do for you what you expect him to do for you.
And he's also, the Castro brothers are charming, but they're not compelling speakers or great orators like Barack Obama was.
No.
They don't have that it factor.
No,
that
because
he
was supposed to be, he spoke at the 2012 convention.
He was supposed to
be the next Obama. Like, we were supposed to hear that speech and we were supposed to remember the 2004 convention where, you know, there weren't red states or blue states, there were purple states or there was the United States of America or whatever the hell it was.
Right.
That basically got Obama taken seriously like as a human. And that did not happen for him at all.
No.
That speech was not
that. It was unmemorable.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they're perfectly nice people.
Yeah. Also on the list, and another unmemorable person, is Tim Kaine.
I mean,
of Virginia.
Tell me, America, a fact about Tim Kaine right now.
No, you can't.
You can't. I mean,
you also can't pick him out of a lineup, but.
No. I currently, as a person who follows the news, if you had a line of white men in front of me here.
It's an eeny, meeny, miny, moe type
situation. I would
maybe
even be hard pressed in a line of not white men and Tim Kaine. I don't even know enough about Tim Kaine. I know he's from Virginia.
That's it.
That's all I've got.
All I know. Yeah.
I feel like I probably mix him up with Terry McAuliffe.
Yeah.
Basically all the time.
Yeah. But the big news out of this week in the Veep Stakes is that Elizabeth Warren is actively being vetted.
Yes. So that means something, I assume.
That means something, yes.
That's all that we have to share with you about that.
They also did a poll this last week, and 5% of Clinton supporters said Kaine would be the best possible pick. 6% suggested Sherrod Brown, who they included. 12% said Castro, 17% said Cory Booker, and 35% said Elizabeth Warren, which is not shocking.
Then all of these pundits, or all of these consultants
women.
In the article were like, two women. Like, guys.
Yeah.
We can't know what happens with two women if we don't try.
Well, and it's like in one of the panels at Politicon the other day, I can't remember, they quoted Ruth Bader Ginsburg, where they had asked her, like, how many women is the right number on the court? And she was like, 9.
Right.
Because she was like, you would never ask how many is the right number of men on the Supreme Court. So, like, that's what, like, I feel like, A, that's your answer.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
But also, like, if anybody asks that, I mean, one of those two bitches should punch the person in the throat. Because, like, don't ask me that.
No, we've had two men run for president.
Since the beginning of time. Yeah.
And that hasn't really been going so hot for us anyway.
No.
So, why, I mean, like, what is uniquely bad about two women? Like,
right.
And is America ready for it? Well, you know, we had the same conversation come up again and again when Barack Obama was running for president, because we didn't know if America was ready for a black president. We fucking were.
Yeah.
We're ready for female president. We're ready for a female ticket.
Right.
An all-female ticket.
If you're ready
because those are going to be the better candidates.
Right, exactly.
Like, that's what makes us ready.
And the whole job of the vice president is to become the president if something happens to the president. So if you're ready for a president who is a woman,
then you're certainly ready for a vice president who is a woman.
Inherently, you are ready for a vice president who is a woman.
The logic follows.
Right.
I mean, we're ready for the best candidates that this race can offer.
Yeah.
The best candidates are not going to be Donald Trump and whatever idiot he manages to wrangle into running with him.
Right.
Presumably, I can only think of Chris Christie as a possibility because he's the only idiot who's been willing to be seen with the man.
I know.
But, I mean, if that's your ticket, then why wouldn't we be ready for two women? Two children would be better than...
Yeah, I know. Exactly.
Two female children would be ideal compared to Trump and a Chris Christie type. I mean, like, of course we're ready.
Yeah.
Anyway. Agreed. Moving on.
Well, the Dem platform committee meeting was a disaster. So that's...
Cornel West abstained because he was just like, fuck this.
Raise your hand if you're shocked. Mm-hmm. Neither of us are, by the way.
Nope.
this is what happens when it's stacked with Clinton and Debbie Wasserman Schultz appointees.
It didn't go great. At least, listen, we got the conversations on the table.
Right.
We usually don't even discuss these things.
And we got some things.
We got a couple things.
Clinton herself has disagreed with before. So, like, there were some victories, and even Sanders himself said there were some things that went okay. There were also some things that we're going to have to deal with.
We might,
he even said, he was like, you know, if we don't get these figured out, then we will take them to the floor of the convention.
And so, I mean, I think that they absolutely should. These are issues that are hugely popular within the party.
Well, it's like...
Hugely.
It's like how, you know, a few of the people, I feel like, because they were talking about the party conventions at Politicon this week, and somebody rightly pointed out, and I think this is forgotten a lot, about, like, you know, oh, well, Sanders is going to make a scene at the convention. Literally almost half of those delegates are his.
Yeah.
So, like, if they want to collectively make a scene, that's going to be a real easy scene for them to make.
Yeah, it's not going to be hard. They're just going to have to be there.
Right, that's all
them
I have
being
to do.
There is the scene.
That's the scene.
Yeah. But so we got some language in there that supports a $15 an hour minimum wage.
Right.
Hillary Clinton has not gone on the record in favor of that. So that's...
She sort of did.
Well, no. She went on the record in favor of other people being in favor of a $15 an hour minimum wage, while she herself remained in favor of a $12 an hour minimum wage.
Yes.
That's not being on the record as in favor of that. It's being on the record as being supportive of other people being in favor of that.
Yes. She was always supportive of the fight for 15, which is just the group who is fighting for 15, but she herself
is not in favor of
the fight
advocating
for 12,
which is not a group. That's not a thing. That's not a movement.
Right.
She
is the fight for 12 herself.
Right. The amendment that would have tied it to inflation did not pass.
Right.
By the way,
that's dumb.
Once you're in favor of raising the minimum wage, you recognize that it has to be tied to inflation.
Then you never have to pass minimum wage again, by the way.
Then it's over.
It's what you... This is the deal here that you're looking for.
Yeah.
You're looking to raise it to 15, tie it to inflation,
and then
nobody ever has to think about it again.
I want to know which Democrat was like, this can't be in our platform. This isn't making law.
I know.
This is just the things you're in favor of in the most ideal moment.
Right. If we had done this when we raised it to 725 or whatever the hell it is right now.
We wouldn't have this conversation right now.
Right.
But it's like, if you are inherently in favor of raising it because you recognize that inflation has made it obsolete, then... You are in favor of continuing to raise it as inflation makes it obsolete. And why that would be a thing that the platform couldn't contain is boggles the mind.
Yeah. It also said that they wanted to abolish the death penalty, which is also
not something
against,
Clinton agrees with.
Right. And expanding Social Security. She's come around on that.
Yeah. Well, she's had to because,
recently.
I mean, only an idiot running as a Democrat wouldn't.
They also wanted an updated and modernized version of Glass-Steagall. She also doesn't want that.
No, of course not. Definitely not.
Definitely not that.
But they refused to oppose the TPP. Instead, they said something about how there's a diversity of views in the party.
Right. They didn't want to
kill yourself.
And you want to know the reason that they didn't pass this one? Is because they didn't want to be seen as going against
the president. Yeah, because it's Obama's
Which is like, I mean, really, that's what we're doing with the party platform. President. He's the outgoing president. This is the party platform moving forward into 2016. Like, buzz off.
Yeah. Stop it. Yeah. They also rejected amendments that would have put a freeze on fracking, that would have imposed a carbon tax, and they also rejected single payer.
Right. Not the carbon tax. I was saying earlier. The freeze on fracking, I can't for the life of me get my head around. Because, like, you know, look, there's been some disagreement on single payer healthcare. We have Obamacare. Like, if you want to argue that you just want to expand Obamacare, I think that you are so wrong and, like, not of this party.
Right.
That, like, that's a thing. But, like, I can't. I literally can't see, like, if you have a reason, tell me. I don't understand why you wouldn't ban fracking. No. It just doesn't make any sense.
I can only imagine that it is for the same reason that Hillary Clinton will not say that she's against fracking.
Right.
It is because she must be getting money from that industry.
Right. Because, you know, a lot of people...
It's got to be for the fundraising. Right.
Because a lot of people get on Hillary Clinton's case about the fact that she went and sold fracking around the world. And while, yes, that was not great, I do understand her reasoning. Because her reasoning was because she was trying to get all these countries off of coal.
Right.
Fracking is marginally better than coal in terms of carbon emissions. So, you know, I'm going to give her a slight, ever so slight pass on that.
Right.
But we're not talking about the rest of the world right now. We're talking about a ban on fracking, like, in these United States.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't get it. I really just don't get it.
It's another thing that I can't imagine a constituency within the party
that
would want this.
Are there a bunch of Democrats who are like, frack, frack, frack?
They are getting money from the energy industry, and it is a problem with a conflict of interest that shouldn't be our problem.
Agreed.
That's their problem.
Yeah.
That is not what the Democratic Party, as people who care about the environment and think that we don't want to die in a giant earthquake of you know, water that's flammable.
Right.
Like, think. That is what a very small minority of people who have a direct, you know, receive direct benefit from the fracking industry without the costs think. That I can only imagine that those people include people like Debbie Wasserman Schultz and Hillary Clinton.
I would agree.
In any case.
They must, because.
Who else?
These are their people. No, the five Bernie Sanders people, I would assume, all voted for the ban on fracking.
I mean, you're not getting appointed to the Bernie Sanders platform committee
because you love fracking.
No.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
He's someone who's against it wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
No stop.
Yeah.
By the way, side note, Marco Rubio, he's going to run.
Remember when he wasn't?
Remember in March when he was like, I'm going to go back in January to be a private citizen? Well, no, he's not.
God, can we please get a Marco Rubio and, God, what's his face? Alan Grayson race.
I mean,
get
what a dream.
On board with that.
What
it doesn't
a
look,
dream.
The polls don't have Alan Grayson
it's
winning right
odd
now.
Odd because, like, he said he was going to run in part because he doesn't think that either of the presidential candidates are that strong, which I think is hilarious because he was obviously a very weak presidential candidate. So it's like he thinks suddenly that being in the Senate, he'll save America.
Right. Well, I think that he also probably wants to continue to be in the Senate. So when
he can run again,
when Trump loses in 2016, that in 2020 that he can be like, look, guys,
it's me again.
Right. Well, and the Republicans have a long history of having the next guy in. He isn't necessarily the next guy in because he got,
this
what,
Trump
he
thing
got
has
like
really
10th, I think,
rankled
out of 16, but,
their
I mean,
system a little, though. I mean, their system is in shambles at the moment. Because normally you come in second-ish, and then the next year it's your turn.
Yeah.
You get to take turns. It's very civil.
It should have been Rick Santorum's year.
It was Rick Santorum's year this year.
Yeah.
And that
couldn't have been less his year, by
couldn't
the way.
Have been, this was the least his year it's ever been.
I know.
It was literally more Scott Walker's year than it was his year. And remember when he dropped out? I don't either, because it was so long ago. SCOTUS is also up to ruining things. As we suspected, having a 4-4 split in the court isn't going well for anyone.
It's not great.
Basically, they're just not making determinations anymore.
It certainly isn't going well for immigrants.
No, certainly not. So Obama's deferred action for parents of Americans order, which is DAPA, which is related to DACA, which is the children's version of the act, was challenged by Texas and a bunch of other states, and it made it to the Supreme Court.
Right.
The administration asked the Supreme Court to look into it because there had been an injunction.
Right. This was when they asked them when there were 9 of them.
Right. Exactly. And didn't realize that things would fall apart this dramatically. But basically, because of the 4-4 split, the injunction remains.
Just goes
and
back
so
to the lower court, and there's an injunction.
And,
so,
right,
that,
so
all of that
goes away, and suddenly all of these people who are parents of legal U.S. citizens or residents
who have been given
deferred deportation because their children are Americans are in danger of being deported.
Yeah.
That's not the answer.
It's not the answer, guys.
No. Their children are American citizens.
Right.
So this is not... I mean,
by law.
By law, by law, they're born here or they're legal citizen, permanent residents. Yeah. These are not people who just like snuck their whole family across the border. These are people who have American families, yeah. and now they're going to be prevented from staying with them.
Yeah,
that's some bonkers town craziness.
That's upsetting.
It's upsetting.
Yep.
So the program was halted back in February of 2015, pending these court cases, and it's going to be pending them forever.
Right.
Because we're just going to be in nonstop challenges till the end of time.
Well. Yeah,
unless the next president figures this shit out and appoints somebody to be on the Supreme Court.
Donald Trump is going to go down in flames, and then we're going to have Supreme Court Justice Merrick Garland is what's going to happen. But
I mean, once Donald Trump goes down in flames, let's have a fucking hippie on the court.
I know. I have been on record as saying, like, if Hillary Clinton wins the presidency, that Obama should pull Merrick Garland's name from consideration.
He's a Republican.
And she should pick the looniest person she can. She won't.
No, she's
but
not.
She might. But like what we have always said is that she might do something at least that would throw a bone to the people who got her elected. Specifically, yeah, I think that she would try and get the first African American woman on the court.
I would hope so.
I would be in favor of that.
Part of Sotomayor had a blazing dissent on this, part of the reason was she pointed out that having people of different experiences on the court is important in cases like this,
right,
where you have people who can understand and really feel the relevance of a case like this, as opposed to just white men and Clarence Thomas, who's a non-entity.
Right.
Like that this is one of the reasons that we should strive to have a diverse Supreme Court is because it is important that someone on the court be in some way connected to or find some merit in, you know, in the cases of people who white men don't always necessarily understand.
Right. Yeah.
In any case, that's the news this week.
We did it.
We did it.
We went to 2 days of Politicon. We did a podcast.
I may never think again. I don't know.
I do. God. Do we have to work tomorrow? We do.
I don't want to talk about it.
I know.
Me either. Well, we'll talk to you next week.
Go find us on social media and see all of our fun Politicon times.
Next week will be, because it's the 4th of July, it may be Monday.
Tuesday, it could be.
It's impossible to know, but
it's gonna be
we
one of the
will
days.
Get to you with the news.
We're going to do it.
Because we're dedicated.
We're those guys.
Yeah, exactly. All right. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.